Hey guys, welcome back to Podcast of the Day. And we have travelled over to Belfast and CrossFit 8020, which we've been a few times before, to speak to a couple of their athletes. And kicking things off is Cara Hamilton.
Hello.
New name?
Yeah, new name.
Recently married?
Yes, September, so 6 months now.
How are you enjoying married life?
It's great. Yeah, really, really good. It's hard to like remember life before it.
Oh, so nice. So one of the reasons to pop down here and speak to you is I think you're in a really unique position as an athlete because you have transferred your skills as a professional footballer across into CrossFit and you're now what we'd call a sanctionals athlete.
Yeah.
So let's go way back to the beginning. Football.
Yeah.
How did you get into football?
To be honest, I've been playing football ever since I can remember. I started off in a local club. It was actually a boys' football team, and I was the only girl there, the only girl in that club, the only girl in that entire league. So that was fun in itself to just be kicking around with the boys every week. From I was about probably 10, that's when I started playing for that local club, until I was 14, and then had to transfer over into the girls game because the rule at that time was that once you hit 14, then you had to go to a girls league, and you were no longer able to play with boys. So that's kind of just where it started, just at a local team, just going down in the summer to like their summer like mini soccer thing, and then the coach there just decided it would be a good idea to have me on the team. He was kind of like, I don't really know how this works, whether you can have girls and boys football teams, but like you're one of the best players here, so we can't really not have you. Like, that's I want awesome. You to play. So that's how it all started.
Do you think it helped your development as an athlete being amongst boys from an early age?
Definitely, yeah. I noticed it whenever I first progressed into playing then with girls. Like, I just noticed such a difference in like athleticism, strength, speed. I just developed at a much faster rate probably than girls my age. So whenever I did start playing with girls, it was massively noticeable, like how much playing with boys had developed me so quickly. Definitely.
So how did it go from fun under 14s to meeting this coach who kept you to becoming a professional? And I guess, actually, how professional is professional in this country when it comes to women's football?
Yeah, so from playing with that boys team, I don't know how I was seen or scouted or whatever. But
I suppose when it's that age, you're kind of a bit oblivious. You're just riding the wave of the next competition.
Yeah, but I guess having a girl in a boys' league, like you kind of stand out anyway. But I got picked up then and went to trials for Northern Ireland with the women's team at this stage. So I started playing for Northern Ireland at under 15 level, and then whenever I was around 13, and then started progressing up through the age groups, then eventually to senior level. So I started with under 15s, then moved under 17 whenever I was 15. So I was still the youngest by quite a distance, and then whenever I was 15, the senior manager at the time watched me play for the under 17s, and then I got picked for the senior squad at 15, which was like unheard of.
I was going to say, wasn't it a regular thing to be playing 2 years young at each age grade?
No, probably not. All of them were in and around the sort of that older age, and then to be 15 and playing for the senior team, that was unheard of. Like, I still hold the record as the youngest player to ever be capped at senior level for Northern Ireland, and hopefully that'll stand for a long time. I hope I'll maintain that record. In terms of playing them for Northern Ireland, it still is an amateur sport here in Northern Ireland. So the girls that I was playing amongst, obviously I was at school at the time, but the girls who were, you know, 26, 27, all just worked, you know, regular jobs, and then had to take time out to go and play at national level. And that's still the case. Now there's more opportunities now to go away to England, to France, to America, or other places in Europe and get professional contracts. It is becoming a more regular thing, like the women's game has developed, but it's still amateur here in Northern Ireland. So if you're playing for a club here locally, it's still just you do your regular job and then you go in the evenings to play for your club. So it is still an amateur sport here.
what did it mean to you over the summer with the Women's World Cup, seeing it kind of explode into the wider sporting scene?
Yeah, it's been amazing. And part of me still is like, oh, I wish I was still a part of it, just to see where I would be at now, to see if, you know, I would have a professional contract or whatever. But I'm just really amazed to see just the support that it's getting and the coverage that it gets on the TV. Like, could never have imagined that would be the case whenever I was starting off, like at 15, playing for the national team. Like, nobody knew a thing. Nobody knew like what tournaments we were going to. It was never covered on social media or anything. We got absolutely nothing.
And it's crazy, now, isn't it, how it's changed.
Yeah, now even here in Northern Ireland, it's great to see the girls getting the coverage that even the men do, and getting the same treatment. It's great.
So what were the competitive tournaments that you were taking part in?
So usually just the qualifiers for like the World Cups, for European Championships, whether that be at underage level or at senior level. Unfortunately, we're still yet to qualify for a major tournament.
It will come.
Northern Ireland will make it. Yeah. Yeah, I think they've definitely made massive strides in the last couple of months. So if they can start to just keep closing the gap, then I do think they will qualify for a major tournament in the next 5 to 10 years, if they can keep progressing at the rate that they are, and more if more girls are going off to get professional contracts and playing at that level, then it can only raise the standard, you know, of the national team as a whole. If more of those girls can be playing professionally, playing day in, day out, training day in, day out, then that will raise the level in the national team, and they could hopefully be on par with, you know, other teams in Europe and, you know, qualify for a major tournament. I'd love to see that.
And I'm right in saying that you did chase this as a career
at
one point.
Yeah. I guess I was slightly unlucky just with injuries and stuff, and the timing of those. Whenever I broke into the senior women's national team, I was just like flying. I was like, this is incredible. I'm going to make it as a professional. And then whenever I was, I think I just turned 16, and we were away at a tournament with the under-19s in Hungary. And I just had this awful pain in my foot, and I just couldn't understand where it had come from. Couldn't remember whether like it hadn't come from a tackle or anything like that. So it was just really strange. Made my way through that tournament anyway, and we topped the group. We were really successful in that tournament. But after I came home, like, I literally couldn't even walk on it. And I was like, okay, I probably need to get this seen to. Turns out, long story short, I had a stress fracture in my foot, which generally they only take like 6 to 8 weeks, and they should heal naturally. But very long story short, it took close to 4 years for me to get over that injury. So I didn't play any football within that time, from 16 to the age of 20. Just through various surgeries and rehabs and different issues, I just couldn't seem to shake the injury completely. Yeah. So that was probably a really crucial time for me to, you know, chase that professional contract.
And it was always taken away from you.
Yeah, and I went through periods where I was like, oh, I don't want this anymore. You know, I don't know if I even want to go back and play. It was just so hard to stay motivated and to continue to do the rehab. Whenever every time I went to play again, I'd be like, no, this is still painful. And I had 2 surgeries within that time. So like, you were just constantly doing rehab and trying to get back fit again.
How long was your rehab block compared to the amount you'd play for it to flare back up?
So after the surgery, there was just so many different complications, and it just didn't seem to ever fix. Like, I was still having pain and stuff, and I was trying to go back to play, and I was still having issues. So we just tried everything to try and get it to fix, and eventually it was just through stubbornness, I just came to a point where it was like, I'm just gonna play through this and don't care if it hurts. And thankfully now I don't have any issues with it anymore, but definitely that 16 to 20 period is, you know, I was leaving school and I had to decide, you know, where I wanted to go. And I think if I had been playing football at the time, I probably would have gone, you know, maybe to America, or I would have went to England and tried to chase a professional contract at that point. But I was still going through rehab and still injured at the time. So football kind of had to just fall by the wayside until I was able to start playing again, probably around 20, 21.
So where did life take you instead?
So instead, I stayed here for university, went to Queen's, and then picked up CrossFit whenever I started university, actually as part of like the rehab process for my football injury at the time. So I was seeing a strength and conditioning coach, and he was writing me a program and things, and I was going to one-to-one sessions with him. But I was going to one-to-one sessions with him in a CrossFit gym, but had no idea that this was a CrossFit gym or what that CrossFit gym was or anything. I was just doing my one-to-ones with him, and then eventually he sort of said, do you want to try coming to a class someday? The sort of the workouts and the programming that he was kind of doing for me was CrossFit-esque. It was kind of that sort of basis. And then he said, come try a class. I think you might actually be quite good at it. And then that's how it all kind of kicked off from there. Whenever I was about, that's whenever I was 20, so 3 years ago. Yeah.
So really not long ago
at all. 3 years. Yeah.
Is there still part of you thinking that you might go back to football, or you could marry your CrossFit and football together?
I think I did try at the start to try and marry the two together. So when I started doing CrossFit then, and then I started making my way back into football after the injury period and stuff, I was trying to go back and forth between the two. And then even whenever, so during that time, I think whenever I must have been 21, so my final year of university, I moved to Iceland to go and play football there. And obviously Iceland's
home of CrossFit.
So I started trying to marry the two there. And I ended up just completely being absolutely shattered and being wrecked trying to go and play professionally for a club. But then I was trying to do CrossFit at the same time and trying to train for both. And I kind of just realized in that period, like, if you want to do one of these at the highest level, it's got to be your main focus. You can't marry the two. I think recreationally you could maybe have CrossFit on the side if you wanted to pursue like a professional football career. You could sort of supplement your training with that, but if you want to pursue one of the two at the highest level, it's got to be your sole focus. People like ask me now, do you still see yourself going back to football? And I don't know how it'll pan out depending on how far this progresses, or, you know, what age I decide I want to give up CrossFit at, or whatever, competitively. Maybe I could make a return to football. I'm still young enough possibly to have a career in both. We'll see.
So how much strength conditioning were you doing for football before you ended up doing kind of rehab CrossFit-y things? Had you kind of built a natural kind of ability in the sport already?
Not really. Strength and conditioning with football wasn't really emphasized very much. It could just be here in Northern Ireland, the fact that it wasn't, you know, as at a progressed stage as it is now. You know, I think they take things like strength and conditioning much more seriously now, and it is a bigger element and plays a bigger part. But strength and conditioning for us, whenever I was sort of 15, 16 and starting off in the national team, wasn't a big thing. So I didn't really get the chance to build that base. We did a lot of running, obviously, and conditioning, as opposed to being in the gym and squatting a lot and benching and, you know, building a lot of that, you know, strength. We just did more running out in the pitch, you know, running to the halfway line and back and doing those kind of things. And I loved that.
A bit of down-ups and...
No, it was just really pure... Nothing. Yeah, just it was just pure endurance. Running. It was like run to the 18-yard line and back and run to the halfway and back and, you know, just repeat that.
Yeah.
And I always loved that side of it. I always loved the fitness, whereas everybody else just dreaded it. Absolutely hated it. And they all used to be like, right, we're all just going to go at the same pace. And I was like, no, I'm going to... I'm going to go really hard here. Like, I wanted to be the fittest and I wanted to be first. Whereas they were all like, no, let's just take it easy, girls. Like, everybody just go together. And I would have been, you know, darting out in front of all of them. So fitness was kind of a big thing in terms of like your conditioning, but the strength element of it really wasn't pushed at all. But I think we just didn't really have like the facilities and the funding and all that kind of thing and the time to put into that, because, you know, people couldn't dedicate every single day of the week to training, because we were either, well, I was in school or those girls were just working 9-to-5 jobs. So it wasn't our full-time thing. So I think just because we didn't have the time to dedicate to it, we had to just put all of our time that we could into playing on the pitch, yeah, and actually just having the ball out.
Do you think that mentality you had in your fitness sessions is what, when you came to having to make the choice, football or CrossFit, is what led you towards CrossFit?
What sort of mentality?
That mentality of wanting to go faster, wanting to win, wanting to be the fittest person on the pitch.
I think so. I think maybe part of me has always just maybe, yeah, wanted to push myself more and not sort of be like, I don't want to say held back by the rest of the team, but maybe I think I just work better as an individual, and I want to push myself rather than, you know, being part of a team. Like, I do love team sports, I still do and probably always will, but yeah, I think that side of me that just always wanted to, you know, be first, and, you know, I don't care what everybody else is going to do, like, I'm going to push myself. I think that's probably what really drew me to CrossFit, yeah.
So when did you know CrossFit's the one?
Quite early on, I think. Whenever I just started off doing regular classes and stuff, I just, as most people do, just got completely hooked. And I think that started, then my football interest just started to wane a bit.
Yeah. Where were you training in Iceland?
I was in Reykjavik.
Yeah.
And I was training in CrossFit Reykjavik. So I think...
So a few inspirations there.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, whenever I was in Iceland, like, I just didn't have the desire to go and train on the pitch for football the way I did for going to the gym and doing a session. I wasn't getting the same buzz from it. And I was like, I don't know whether this is just because it's a new thing or... I didn't know what it was. I was like, I'm going to give this some time. You know, I don't want to make a rash decision and say, I'm going to give up football here and just drop all of this, because all I wanted in that period whenever I was injured was to be back playing again.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't understand why all of a sudden I didn't have the desire to play.
Do you understand now?
Yeah. It was just like, I really do just love the CrossFit thing, yeah. And I wanted to give it a bit of time. I was like, I know this is a new thing for me, and, you know, whenever you pick up something new and it's exciting and you're progressing, you know, it is something new, and you're just, you want to keep doing that. So I was like, I want to give this a bit of time to kind of, you know, do it a bit more, because whenever you start to maybe plateau a bit more within CrossFit and you're not PBing every day, I wanted to see whether I still had that love for it. So I was kind of going back and forth between the two and didn't want to drop football completely. And then it was after I came back from Iceland and started chatting to Neil and stuff about, you know, doing more of a competitive side of things, then that's whenever I started to drop football off a bit more.
How much did you cross over with Annie Thorisdottir? And
Annie was the one who was there pretty much every day. Sarah, Sigmund's daughter, was in once or twice, but she generally doesn't train there all the time. And then Katrin was over for like a week. Whenever I was there, it was leading up to regionals,
yeah,
in the old format. So Annie and BKG were both in doing their regionals training, and they just had this whole portion of the gym to themselves. Like, they had all the video cameras out to so they could obviously watch their workouts, yeah, back and practice them before regionals, and then everybody else in the gym was just looking over at them.
Was it just inspirational at that point? It wasn't like you were training together or anything like that?
No, not like, at that stage. I was just a complete peasant in the classes, you know, like everybody else, complete nobody. But it was cool just watching them and just thinking, like, at that stage I never thought that I would be anywhere near them, you know, possibly being on the floor, yeah, beside them. And the same with Sarah. And then there's last year at Strength and Depth, Sarah's on the same floor as you, so it was just really, really cool.
Okay, so you came back here, you spoke to Neil.
Yeah.
Is this your local hometown, your local box?
Not quite. I mean, my mum and dad's house is probably about half an hour from here, so it was the closest one whenever I was living at home with my parents. Yeah. Now it's not, now that Michael and I have moved out the other side of Belfast, but I still...
You still travel to train here every day?
I do my morning sessions in Belfast because it's closer to work, and then just go straight to work, and then in the evenings I'll come here, just because... You just have all the facilities that you need here, and I don't mind the travel.
How does your other half find the travel? He's not enjoying it.
it can be frustrating waiting for me to come home whenever I say that I'm leaving the gym now, and then
like 40, 50, 60 minutes
okay, an hour and a half, she's still not home. I don't think she's left yet.
Amazing. How much of it was about Neil though? Because Neil's obviously got a really good reputation in Ireland. He's coached CrossFit Games athletes.
Yeah.
Dot. I mean, it's having him in your corner is quite a big thing.
It is, yeah. I didn't really know much about the sort of competitive side of CrossFit whenever I started. I didn't know who the like big names were, yeah, and who I should go to for coaching and things like that. So I managed to get Neil's number just through friends who were training on his program at the time. And then I was kind of going back and forth between Belfast and here, and then just as sort of like a competitive group has kind of like evolved here at 80/20, and that's just really good to have that sort of push as well, to obviously have PD here, and Mickey will come and train here sometimes, and then we just have other really good athletes here, so it's just really good to have that group environment, and that really, really helps pushing me in training, especially at the weekends. We'll generally all do like the same sort of sessions and all push each other. So
on Instagram I've seen you doing Lowlands throwdowns with PD Savage, who's currently the Ireland national champion.
Yeah.
And I guess does it remind you and feed back into that time where you were doing football with the boys?
Yeah.
I mean, he's quite an intimidating man to like pair yourself against to work out.
Yeah, definitely. I think it always just seems to happen that, you know, boys are just more competitive. And you definitely, I don't know, get more of a buzz off competing against males. I don't know.
I think it's definitely a certain type of person who gets a buzz off competing against males. Like, I'm fine if I'm beating them. The moment they start pulling ahead, I properly shout, oh, I was never going to beat you anyway.
Yeah.
Off you go, have fun.
Maybe it is just harping back to those football days where I just loved getting one up on the boys. It was just so satisfying.
So how are things going this year? How did you set out your... Oh, you've just come back from injury.
Yeah.
So start the year, that's not ideal.
Not the best way to start the season. So that injury happened in September past, and obviously the Open was like October time. So I was really looking forward to doing the Open in October, because the one in March I had seen just massive progression. So I'd probably been on system with Neil like a year whenever the Open happened in March, and I'd just seen a massive jump. Obviously there'd been huge progression.
I'd been to strength and depth.
I'd stopped playing football completely, so I wasn't trying to balance the two, and I was saying like, this is sort of my sole focus at the moment. And then got injured in September. It was a shoulder injury. It wasn't anything major. It didn't require surgery or anything like that. It was just I needed to take a bit of a step back and do a bit of rehab and get better at like doing warm-ups and stretches and things like that, because I was really neglecting that sort of side of things. And then with the new format and stuff, the Open is obviously like a qualifier for a lot of sanctionals. Yeah. So that meant that loads of sanctionals were wiped out for me. Like, I couldn't qualify for strength and depth. They used the Open. I couldn't qualify for the Reykjavik one. Loads of other ones in Europe used the Open as their qualifying method. So I was like, right, okay, I'm kind of limited in my options here as to where I can go. So...
And has that fully dictated your season to a certain extent now?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So I could really only do the ones that had their own qualifier rather than using the Open.
Which is kind of ironic in a way, because people like the sanctional owners are trying to make it easier by grouping with the IOQ and with the Open.
Yeah.
But if you're injured for that period of time, the entire year's gone.
Yeah, you're wiped out of a lot of sanctionals. Filthy 150 I was also hoping to do, but it was like directly after the Open. I did the IOQs, but then couldn't do Filthy because I'd hurt my shoulder and I wasn't training properly or anything, so couldn't do Filthy, which was a disappointing one to miss out on with like a home crowd.
Home advantage.
Yeah, it would have been nice to do the first sanctional in Ireland. So yeah, the only ones that I was kind of left with were ones that were really far away, so I've waited for ages to like get my chance, and I just want to like get back on the floor again, because it's been like over a year now since strength and depth, and I would have wanted to do sanctionals before this, but it's just the way it plays out, and you've got to be patient. So yeah, looking forward to next year. Hopefully I can stay injury free and I'll have a lot more choice as to which ones I go to, and I can pick probably ones closer to home, because it obviously gets really expensive to travel all the way around the world.
It's quite nice though, isn't it, that you can incorporate your travel with your...
Yeah, there are places that I never thought that I would want to go to. I didn't really have a desire to go to Shanghai, and then I thought, sure, why not? It's a chance to see those sorts of places. But yeah, budget dependent. I'll maybe do a couple more next year, but they'll probably be ones closer to home, like Filthy or, you know, Strength and Depth's only over in London, so I'll definitely pencil those into the calendar.
Is there any advantage, obviously yours is forced, but any advantage to loading the back end of the calendar, because theoretically you know who's already qualified and who you're up against on the floor, and you can essentially plan your workouts better and where you need to finish in tables, right?
I know. I don't know whether everybody will start to maybe have that idea, and then everybody goes towards the back end of the season and then the front end of the season looks okay. It doesn't really matter for me. Like, I at the minute, obviously, like the games, you want to target, you want to be at the highest level of the sport, but I'm not really in like a major rush. I haven't said, you know, like, oh, I need to make it this year or next year. I know like that I have time. So at the minute it is more just of a development phase and get the experience from these sanctionals. And I haven't really had a lot of time out on the floor against, you know, some of the top athletes in the world, because my competitive career has been relatively short in CrossFit. Yeah. So at the minute it is more just like development, and getting used to being exposed to you know, random events that they could throw in there, and try and get as much exposure to as many elements of the sport as I can, and get as much exposure to as many, you know, types of levels of athletes as well, just coming up against, you know, whoever ends up being there at those sanctionals. So I'm not in like the place where I'm like, oh, I think I should pick this one because I have a chance of qualifying for the games. Personally, I don't think I'm at that level yet anyway, and I probably wouldn't, I don't want to say I wouldn't want to go to the games at this stage, but I don't think I would.
You don't want to go to get cut, you don't want to show up.
Yeah, I would absolutely want to go there knowing that, like, I'm going to make it to, you know, the third or fourth day, and I want to make it towards the end and try and be, you know, top 30, top 40, whatever, rather than, yeah, like you said, doing one event and packing your bags and going, oh, that was a nice
lovely holiday
trip.
Yeah. Great workout.
Yeah So yeah, at the minute just trying to develop as much as possible.
How much can you draw on the experiences of PD and Mickey and Neil and the people in this gym?
It's great having them here. Yeah, just getting their experiences and stuff, and I can see the level that I need to be at as well, and training up towards that level every weekend. Obviously Mickey finished
27?
Sorry for not knowing.
No, there might have been a few drug relates.
Yeah. So, you know, comparing yourself to someone like that, you know, week on week, if we're training together, it's great to be in and amongst those people, and to have them, you know, right on your doorstep is something that not everybody has the luxury of, you know, to train with those types of people every week.
Yeah, what you said about the competitive environment here is what keeps you, like, travelling all the way across Belfast, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'll definitely be training here as much as possible, to avail of, like, the facilities that are here and just the environment, because, like, the environment is a big thing. There's nothing worse, I find, than just training in an empty gym or in a quiet gym, even if there's people here, if they're not necessarily doing the same thing as me, just having other people around just makes it a better environment to train in, rather than being in an empty gym where it's just you and a bit of music.
It's so true.
Yeah.
You can't talk really about Irish CrossFit, can you, and successful women without referencing Emma McQuaid, because she has literally been the golden girl of Irish CrossFit for the last, eight years?
However long it's been.
How much crossover do you guys have?
I would be in contact with her quite regularly, whether it's just through, you know, social media or whatever. And then I work for Black Box, and Black Box sponsor her. So she would be up at HQ quite a lot, doing various shoots, or just being around there as one of their athletes. So we chat a good bit. And yeah, I don't know if we've actually competed against each other yet. I don't think we have. Oh no, well, she was in strength and depth last year. So we've maybe only been to one or two competitions mutually. I think, like, obviously whenever there's somebody new coming up and people are just sort of maybe trying to pitch you against each other, but we're each just running very different races and we're at very different stages of our careers. But I definitely, like, you cannot not, as you said, talk about Irish CrossFit and not mention her. Like, to be where she's been for the past 6 years is incredible, to have stayed at that level. And she's just gradually been on that, you know, incline, you know, gradually every year making that progress, and then making the games last year and
finally getting her shot,
and doing exactly what I would want to do, in going and placing so well, you know, in placing. She was 20th after that girl got chucked out, but she just has steadily been on that incline and then gone to the big stage and delivered as well. And I've no doubt that this year she'll probably finish even higher and just continue to grow every year. And it's just exactly kind of the progression that I would hopefully like to follow, just making that progress year on year.
So there is an element of role model there, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. For someone to, like, Northern Ireland's just such a small country, and for someone that you know to be one of the top athletes in the world, I think sometimes she's maybe not, for some reason, I feel like she's not, like, ranked up there sometimes with the likes of Tia and Sarah and all those, you know, so-called big names. But, like, she is a big name. Like, she is a big hitter in the game. And, you know, you have to hold her up there in, you know, that place with the likes of Tia and Sarah, because she's definitely, you know, on their level and punching well above her weight.
Ireland's weight.
Ireland's weight, yeah. It's always just kind of seen as just a small sort of insignificant place almost, but I definitely think, like, across the board with Mickey, PD, Emma, Sam Stewart, all those guys, we definitely just punch above our weight in a small place.
It's a question that I've asked the guys as well, but you're in a unique position in being in Northern Ireland, because you can choose whether you're part of the Irish Open or the English Open.
Yeah.
does it feel more kind of more right to you to fall under the Irish Open?
I don't know. I think, yeah, it probably does.
Because you compete then against the people that you compete with on the circuit in, like, kind of local level competitions.
Right? Yeah.
You know the field better.
Yeah, definitely. I don't feel like we're part of sort of the UK one. I feel like we just have our own hub here in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why you affiliate more with Irish CrossFit. It is just more of like it's just its own community. And I think it's a nicer community to be a part of almost, just because you know people, and you know, you train with a lot of them a lot of the time, and you see them more at competitions, and you just interact with them a whole lot more and interact with the community in Ireland more than you do the UK scene. So I think it probably feels more natural to be a part of the Irish one, yeah.
And do you think it's important to boost that community element in Ireland by taking part?
yeah,
is an important thing to you personally.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And with Filthy 150 especially, like, it's hopefully going to be a huge sanctional in the next few years, and you want to get behind that. And I know, like, Darina has big plans to make it, you know, one of the best sanctionals in the world.
It was pretty good this year,
too. It was big this year, yeah. From what I've watched of other ones and, you know, just seen online, like, Filthy just definitely looked a lot more impressive than a lot of them. So, you know, hopefully it will be up there with, you know, Wodapalooza and even Rogue. You know, you want to try and push that home event and really champion it and, you know, try and make it one of the biggest and one of the best, because I know that's their plans, and I think if we all get behind it, it definitely will be.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
for
no
taking
problem.
The time to sit
thank
down.
Thank you.
And obviously everyone at Pod, everyone I mean mostly me, wish you all the best for the sanctional season.
Thank
Can't
you.
Wait to see you back out on the floor, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that events within,
go ahead.
Yeah, within the safety of others, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we'll see you on the floor soon.
Thank you. Thank
Hopefully
you.
Taking home CrossFit Games invitation.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, that's the plan.